He moved off after them, shaken by his thoughts, but already pondering possible actions should it prove necessary, and wondering if he'd done the right thing in saving the Deathstalker's life after all. He'd always felt a little superior because some humans feared Espers for their powers. Now he knew how those people felt. He wasn't top of the heap anymore. He wasn't even sure he could see the top of the heap from where he was. Back among the retreating Empire troopers were Toby Schreck and his cameraman Flynn. They'd been put down to join the ground forces and get close-up shots of the glorious invasion. Only things hadn't turned out that way. The moment it became clear things were going seriously wrong, Lieutenant Foulkes ordered Flynn to recall his camera and shut it down. The live broadcast was over, owing to technical difficulties. To make it clear how serious those difficulties were, Foulkes stuck a gun in Flynn's back and kept it there until the camera had safely returned to perch on Flynn's shoulder again. Its single red eye went out, and it was still. Toby protested, but no one listened to him. He hadn't expected they would, but he had to raise his voice anyway, or they'd think he was getting soft. Neither he nor Flynn doubted Foulkes would have used the gun. He was white with fury at the invading force's defeat, and looked like he was ready to take it out on anyone stupid enough to upset him. So Toby and Flynn fell back with the retreating forces until Foulkes was called away to be objectionable somewhere else. After he was gone, they got some great footage of the crashing gravity barge, and then had to run like hell as molten metal came dropping out of the sky like a deadly hail. As they trudged back into the snows outside the city and temporary safety, Toby and Flynn gave up trying to interview the exhausted troopers after the negative replies escalated from the obscene to actual death threats.
"Wonder where they'll send us next," said Flynn after a while.
"Somewhere where things are going rather better, I should imagine,"
said Toby.
"Assuming there is such a place."
"Bound to be. The defenders just got lucky here, that's all."
"I don't know. What were the odds of a gravity barge just happening to fall on the war wagons?"
"What are you implying? That the rebels brought it down in some way? Forget it. They don't have that kind of weaponry. And if you're thinking of Espers, even the infamous Inspector Topaz, her own bad self, couldn't have brought down something that big. Espers just don't come that strong. And that's without Legion scrambling their minds."
"This is Mistport. I've heard things about Mistport. Never wanted to come here in the first place."
"It's certainly full of surprises. Did you see who was leading the rebel forces? Jack Random, looking just like his old holo pictures. Only, if that's Jack Random, whom did we see leading the rebel forces on Technos 3? That man looked a lot older and harder used, and I don't believe he could have got from there to here in so short a time as we did without the Empire knowing about it."
"Maybe one of them's a double, or a clone. Either way, there's a lot to this story that we're not being told."
"Nothing new there. If we run across him again, maybe we can pin him down for an interview. I could name my own price for a piece like that. Prime time. Guaranteed."
"The powers that be and who intend to keep on being would never let you show it." Toby grinned.
"Where there's a wallet, there's a way."
In the labyrinthian heart of Thieves' Quarter, in the Blackthorn Inn, representatives of the Esper Union were fighting to keep track of what was happening. More people were arriving all the time, filling the crowded room as news poured in from all over the city. The council members, minus Albert Magnus, were still poring over the great map of Mistport, studying the situation with darkening scowls. The news was rarely good. The Esper reps showed the positions of the gravity barges and sleds as small black shadows drifting over the map. Espers flying up to fight them showed as bright burning sparks. The sparks tended to blink out suddenly after a while, and no one needed to ask why. More shadows showed at the boundaries of the city, where the Empire forces had breached the boundary walls. The dark stains spread inward as the invading forces pressed on into the city, despite all the defenders could do to slow or stop them. The shadows were holding only at the southwest boundary, where news of an unexpected victory was beginning to drift in. Chance's children lay huddled on blankets in one corner of the room, keeping up a steady, quiet babble of information and warnings as Chance moved among them, cajoling and praising and bribing them with bits of candy. Any one of them he left alone for too long tended to drift into waking nightmares, screaming and howling piteously. The Esper Union reps were hiding the Blackthorn's position and inhabitants with their superior mental abilities, but even they couldn't protect the Abraxas children from the horror of Legion. The never-ending scream rasping in their minds and souls like the scrape of bone on bone or the tearing of living meat. No one knew how the children experienced it, but the look on their small faces as they mewled despairingly and twisted in their blankets was enough to keep anyone from asking. Chance pleaded with the council to let him sedate the children, but the answer was always no. They were too useful. A few espers teleported in and out with important messages, appearing and disappearing in puffs of disturbed air. Static sparked around them, discharging painfully through the nearest metal. They were risking their lives with every jump, and everyone knew it. Legion's scream was interrupting their concentration. Some never arrived, just blinked out in one location, and were never seen again. Some arrived at the inn in pieces, or horribly rearranged. One materialized half inside the tavern wall. He was still there, protruding from the brickwork. No one could figure out how to remove him without tearing the wall apart. Luckily, he was dead, so they just draped a cloth across his face to hide the staring eyes and contorted mouth, and pretended he wasn't there. And one man fell out of midair and slammed to the floor in a sticky mess of spurting blood and exposed organs. His journey had turned him inside out. Horribly, he wouldn't die. In the end, Donald Royal cut off the head with one merciful stroke of his sword. The council members and the Esper Union reps struggled to put some kind of planned defenses together, but things were happening so quickly all the time that all they could really do was react to the Empire's actions and provide damage limitations. Raised voices were getting hoarse, and tiredness showed in everybody's eyes. Cider kept hot coffee and mulled ale moving among everyone in the room, and supplied a steady stream of information from her own network of informers, people she used to work with in the past, before she became respectable. She tried not to worry about what had happened to Cat. And overhead, the roar of passing gravity barges shook the inn like thunder, never knowing how close they'd come to the heart of rebel resistance. The first the people in the Blackthorn Inn knew of its targeting was when the disruptor beams began hammering down from the gravity barges hovering directly overhead. The slate roof blew apart, and the upper floor of the inn was suddenly a mass of flames, sweeping rapidly through the private rooms, burying the few inhabitants alive and swallowing their screams in the roar of the fire. The energy beams plowed through the upper floor and plunged on into the main barroom below, where they rebounded from a psionic screen erected at the very last moment by the Espers within. Chance's children had come through with a last-second warning. The Espers in the barroom were representatives of the Esper Union and some of the strongest minds in Mistport, and together they held off the disruptor cannon. But even they couldn't save the Blackthorn. The upper floor was a raging inferno. The barroom's timber ceiling began to blacken and smolder. The whole inn was shaking from the pounding it was taking. Bricks cracked, and fine streams of dust and mortar began to fall. The barroom quickly became stiflingly hot. The Espers could do nothing. It was all they could do to fend off the disruptor beams. Donald Royal barked orders, getting people organized. He had them block off the back stairwell with tables and other furniture, in case the flames from above broke through the closed door. Cider produced buckets of water in case of sudden flash fires. Chance's children were screaming almost continuously now, but he still didn't dare sedate them. They might yet have to run for it. A few people cracked and ran for the main door. Random yelled after them. They wouldn't listen to him. They ran outside, and energy beams blew them apart the moment they appeared. More gravity barges drifted overhead, adding their firepower to the onslaught raging down on a single building. Every building around the inn was already a mass of flames and pulverized rubble. There were dead men and women in the streets, their bodies blackening in the glowing firestorm. Inside the Blackthorn, a timber beam broke away from the ceiling supports, and slammed down like a giant hammer, crushing Lois Baron beneath it. The heavyweight pinned her to the floor, and blood gushed from her mouth as she beat feebly at the wooden beam with her hands. It was obvious she was dying, but the others continued to try and lift the heavy beam off her, until she finally lay back and was still. The dwarf Castle sat beside her and held her dead hand, oblivious to everything. McVeigh and Royal couldn't allow themselves time to mourn. As the only remaining counselors, they had too much to do. If anyone was going to find a way out of this trap, it would have to be the two of them. And that was when the psionic shield began to weaken and break apart. Even the strongest minds in Mistport found it hard to function with Legion's endless scream in their heads. Their power was burning up, and so were they. Blood trickled steadily from their noses and ears. The greatest S-blocker the Empire had ever made beat against their minds, and inch by inch, it shut them down. Cracks appeared in the shield. Thin bolts of energy stabbed through the barroom ceiling, transfixing people here and there like insects on pins. And then, one energy beam hit and killed the strongest Esper, and the screen collapsed. Immediately, Jenny's psycho reached out with her mind and pulled the screen back together again. She had hoped she wouldn't be needed. Once she revealed her presence, she had no doubt Legion would turn all its attention to her, and she wasn't entirely sure she could beat the unnatural thing. But she did what she had to do, taking all the pressure upon herself as one by one the other Espers collapsed and died around her. Very soon, the strain was almost unbearable. For all her strength, Jenny Psycho was no match for the many minds that made up Legion. If she and everyone else in the barroom were to survive, she was going to have to be more than just Jenny Psycho. And so she reached inside herself to that brightly shining place once touched by the Mater Mundi in the dark cells of Silo 9. She called out to the Uber Esper, the Mater Mundi, our mother of all souls, to come and manifest through her again, and pull all the Espers in Mistport together into one great gestalt that would drive Legion and the Empire from Mistworld. She called, and no one answered. Jenny screamed then, a bitter howl of outrage and betrayal and despair that for a moment even drowned out Legion's endless scream. For as far as she could reach with her mind, there was no trace of the Mater Mundi. Only the bright sparks of Mistport's Espers blinking out one by one. And that awful thing that was Legion, slowly turning its full attention upon her. The Mater Mundi had abandoned her. Jenny Psycho held together through sheer willpower. She had to. So many people were depending on her. Her brief touch by the Mater Mundi had made her one of the strongest Espers the Empire had ever seen. But even so, it was all she could do to hold off the many in one that was Legion. The pain was almost unbearable, but she wouldn't give up. If the Council were to die, resistance in Mistport would quickly fall apart, and the Empire would win. She knew the strain was killing her, and didn't care. After enduring the horrors and agonies of Silo 9, she'd sworn to die rather than be taken captive again. Blood leaked steadily from her nose and ears, and sprayed from her mouth with every harsh breath. Some of the pain began to die away, as parts of her mind began to shut down bit by bit. She didn't know it, but her face looked like a grinning skull. And still she fought on, refusing to give in, refusing to be beaten. And slowly she began to gain a new sense of her opponent, Legion, of who and what it was, of what it had been made from. Brains from people she might have known, and Worm Boy's worms. And Legion looked on her and knew who she was. The worms remembered her and what she'd done before. They were scared of her. Jenny Psycho laughed inside her head, and it was a terrible, unforgiving sound. The invading forces pressed forward on all fronts, though more slowly on some than others. It was as though every man, woman, and child who could hold a weapon was out in the streets of Mistport, defending barricades and blocking crossroads, sniping from windows and hidden alleyways, making the troopers fight for every inch and pay for every victory in blood and death. Retreating defenders blew up and collapsed buildings as they fell back to block off streets and slow the Empire's advance. The rebels' projectile weapons confused and scattered troops only used to dealing with the predictability and long pauses of disruptor fire until they learned to advance behind massed force shields, and the projectile guns were no use against them. There were no espers operating now, in the sky or on the streets. Legion had proved too much for all but the strongest, and most of those were dead now. The defenders fell back, street by street, trying to follow Mistport's ages-old plans for last-ditch defense, but the plans hadn't been updated in years. Important routes had been blocked by street markets and new buildings, and some streets didn't exist anymore, save on the oldest maps. The defenders did the best they could, falling back only when there was no other option, retreating slowly toward the vulnerable heart of Mistport. The wounded and refugees traveled through the city on barges on the River Autumn. It was quicker and safer than trusting to the streets. The coal-fired barges chugged up and down the freezing river, their steel prows breaking through the newly forming ice on the surface of the water, their crimson bow lights burning like coals in the night. On either side of the river, buildings burned like coals in hell. The Autumn meandered through the city, passing through guilds' quarter to merchants to thieves, and barges came and went with quiet desperation. Passengers occasionally called out to other craft, anxious for news of missing loved ones or how the battle went, but the answers were often old and rarely good. Some barges became overcrowded with refugees and wounded, slowed down too much, and became easy targets for overhead gravity sleds. Unable to maneuver, the barges were blown apart by disruptors, scattering burning bodies in the dark waters of the Autumn. Burning remnants blocked the way and clogged the docks, and half-charred and ruptured bodies floated in the water and lay captured by the slowly forming ice on the surface. The larger barges armed themselves with heavy-duty projectile weapons and taught the gravity sleds to maintain a respectful distance. Standard tactics for a gravity sled was to deflect incoming fire with its force shield, then lower the shield to fire back while their enemy's energy guns were recharging. They weren't expecting guns that didn't need to recharge between shots. The Empire lost a lot of sleds till word got around. But the Death Stalkers' gift of guns and ammo had been widely spread, and therefore were in short supply everywhere, while there seemed no end to the invading forces. The barge gunners huddled low behind improvised shelters and vowed to make every bullet count. Imperial Marines made their way through the hard-won streets of Mistport, stepping over the dead bodies and tossing grenades into the few buildings that still looked capable of hiding snipers. They left the better areas untouched, of course, and even left a few men behind to guard against looters. When the Empire finally took control of this city, these areas would be reoccupied by the new, imperially approved leaders. But everywhere else, the buildings burned, and fires rose up into the night sky, like beacons of victory. In Tech Quarter, the starport had been thoroughly trashed. For a time, its massed disruptor cannon, harvested from the crashed star cruiser Darkwind, had been enough to keep the gravity barges at bay. Up close, the cannon didn't need its crashed computers for targeting. But the barges soon learned the limits of the cannon's range and stayed well back while they contacted their ship for reinforcements. The Defiant sent down 6 heavily shielded pinnaces to do the job. They came roaring down out of the night, too fast to track, and blew the cannon apart in an explosion that could be heard all across Mistport. With the starport defenseless, the pinnaces swept back and forth in strafing runs, taking out the ships on the landing pads like so many sitting ducks. And while they were doing that, the barges closed in on the control tower. The rebel ships on the pads exploded one after the other in sudden bursts of smoke and fire. Strange lights radiated briefly and were gone as star drives collapsed and released their energies. The landing pads would be wildly radioactive now until the Empire could bring in heavy-duty scrubbers. Only the Death Stalker's ship, Sunstrider 2, survived, protected by superior Haydenman shields. The pinnaces marked it down for later attention and moved on. They had more than enough targets to keep them busy. The control tower lasted the longest, with its reinforced structure and steel glass windows, but even that fell in the end, riddled by disruptor fire from the hovering gravity barges. The steel glass blew inward, transformed into deadly shrapnel that cut down everyone left inside the tower. Some still survived, so the barges set the tower on fire and left it to burn. Their job done, the pinnaces and the barges moved unhurriedly away in search of other targets. People lay dead everywhere across the pads. Ground crews preparing ships for desperate takeoffs, and crowds of people who'd been convinced they'd be safest at the well-defended starport, or who had paid massive bribes to be smuggled off-planet. When the Empire ships came, they were caught out in the open, with nowhere to hide and nowhere to run. And they died screaming for help that never came. Wrecked ships burned on the cracked pads, and what was left of the control tower burned like a giant candle. It shattered walls running like wax in the great heat. The starport had fallen. Young Jack Random led Owen and Hazel and Silver and his adoring followers back into the city in search of people to help. The troops forced back from the Southwest Foundry had departed in search of easier ways into the city. No one doubted they'd find them. Random soon found a street barricade in danger of falling to an Empire attack and moved in quickly to support it. The improvised barricade had been formed from furniture and other suitably heavy objects, dragged out into the street from the surrounding houses, and stacked one by one on top of the other and lashed together, till the resulting wall stood nearly a dozen feet high. Smaller furniture had been broken up to form jagged wooden spikes, projecting from the barricade to discourage the other side from getting too close. Iron nails had been twisted together into caltrops, the points dipped in dung, and then thrown out into the street for the troopers to step on. Random's small army lined themselves up behind the barricade, shooting crossbow bolts and bullets through the gaps in the wall to pick off any trooper who so much as aimed a disruptor at the barricade. It quickly became clear to both sides that only hand-to-hand fighting was going to decide the fate of this stumbling block. And since the barricade blocked the last main route into the city center, its control was vital to both sides. And so the Imperial troops came charging down the street, sheltering behind massed force shields, firing their disruptors blindly as they ran. The energy bolts punched wide holes through the barricade, incinerating those fighters unfortunate enough to be in the way. But as many shots missed as hit, and the barricade still stood. The rebels fired at the troopers' legs, unguarded beneath the force shield, and whole sections of the advancing force came crashing to the ground as they fell over one another. But still the charge came on. Until finally the two sides met at the barricade, and it was up to courage and desperation and naked steel to win the day. Owen and Hazel fought side by side, still linked, feeling stronger and sharper than ever. They didn't need blood or the boost anymore. Something new was working in them now, granting them strength and speed beyond anything they'd ever known before. John Silver had taken the last of his blood long ago, and now only guts and duty were keeping him on his feet. He'd got over his fear of Owen and Hazel. Whatever they had become, they were clearly the best bet for defeating the invading troops, and so Silver had taken on the job of guarding their backs. It seemed even gods needed someone to watch their blind spots. Interestingly enough, Silver couldn't bring himself to give a damn about Jack Random. There was something about the man that made Silver's hackles stand on end, though he couldn't have told you what. Perhaps it was just that the man was too damned perfect. Certainly, he seemed almost like a god, too, standing atop the barricade, swinging his great sword with both hands, defying the Empire to bring him down. The struggle continued, fighting breaking out before and upon and behind the barricade. Owen and Hazel cut down every man who came against them, roaring their defiance and dodging disruptor beams, which was supposed to be impossible. Owen's battle cry of Chandrakor rose above the din again and again, and was taken up by many of the rebels, almost as many as those who fought with Jack Random's name on their lips. They pushed the Imperial troops back and back until finally the rebels came spilling up and over the barricade to drive the troopers back down the street. Hand-to-hand fighting filled the street, the mass of fighters surging this way and that, trampling the dead and the wounded underfoot. The troops roared their battle songs and stood their ground, urged on by armed officers at their back and the battle drug sweeping through their veins. Buildings burned and smoldered to either side of the fighting. The children and those too old or too weak to fight had taken to the roofs and rained stones and slates and boiling water down onto the enemy below. They aimed carefully, and many a trooper was suddenly taken out of the fighting by an unexpected presence from above. Toby Schreck and Flynn were right there in the thick of things, getting it all on film. They were currently keeping their heads well down in a nearby doorway, while Flynn's camera soared above the mayhem, picking out the best shots. Toby's commentary was becoming increasingly breathless, but he kept going, knowing that if he could only smuggle this past the censors, the news agencies would be making up whole new awards just to give to him. This was the good stuff. Folks had been becoming increasingly stuffy about what they could and couldn't shoot, so Toby and Flynn ditched him by the simple expedient of shouting, "Look over there!" and then running off in two different directions. By the time folks had made up his mind which of them to chase or shoot at, it was already too late. Toby and Flynn had got together again easily enough after that, and went in search of the main action. It didn't take them long to find some. And ever since then, they'd been running and dodging and keeping their heads well down from one trouble spot to another, while Flynn's camera got it all on film. Troops and rebels alike both ignored Toby and Flynn as obvious non-combatants, but flying bullets and disruptor beams and crumbling buildings made no such distinction. Toby would have liked to cheer on the rebels, outnumbered and outgunned, but still refusing to be beaten. But he couldn't. Not if he ever wanted the film he was risking his life to get to be shown in the Empire. So he kept his commentary carefully neutral and let the pictures speak for themselves. The young burglar known as Cat was up on the roofs too, doing his bit. He delivered all of Sider's messages and, strictly speaking, should have been on his way back to the Blackthorn, but he couldn't resist getting involved. He'd never thought of himself as a violent man, but this merciless destruction of his city had raised in him an anger that couldn't be denied. And so he pelted the troops below with slates and tiles and anything else he could get his hands on, in between grabbing people who nearly threw themselves off the edge of the roof in their enthusiasm. Cat saw half a dozen troopers manhandling a portable disruptor cannon into position at the far end of the street. The cannon would blow away the barricade and everyone near it with a blast. The defenders wouldn't stand a chance. He was off and running across the steeply slanted roofs. As a deaf mute, he couldn't shout a warning to the defenders below. By the time he'd made the people on the roof understand him, it would be too late. Which meant it was all up to him. He moved silently into position over the troops as they finished assembling the portable cannon. His eyes lit on a crooked chimney stack not far from the edge of the roof. A passing energy beam had neatly ripped away one corner so that it was leaning toward the street. Cat put his back against the chimney stack, braced his boots against the most secure tiles, and strained with all his strength. The brickwork shifted reluctantly beneath him. His face twisted into a pained grimace as he pushed with everything he had in his back and legs. The chimney stack broke away from the roof. There was a sharp crack of bricks and mortar, and the whole damn stack went over the side of the roof, taking Cat with it. He twisted automatically as he fell, already grabbing for handholds. He had a brief glimpse of shocked, upturned faces from the disruptor gun crew, and then they disappeared as the great mass of brickwork slammed down on them like a hammer. Cat's flailing hand caught a wooden shutter as he fell past it, and he took a firm hold. For a moment, his whole weight was hanging by that one hand, but then the momentum of his fall swung him around, and it was the easiest thing in the world to fly through the open window and into the room beyond. He hit the floor rolling and finally crashed up against the far wall.